Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Jaiva Narottamam. Divim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayo Mudirayet. Nasta Praeshu Apadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavat Yutama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishchiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, let us offer our obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, Lord Narayan, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Lata Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance and classes in the Bhagavatam, and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious within the heart is practically destroyed, and thus loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised to a transcendental song, is established as an irrevocable fact. Today we are studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 31. Yarupamitam nijamaya yarpitam. Yarupa metta nija maya yarpitam.
Yarupa metta nija maya yarpitam.
Artasvarupam bahurupa rupitam.
Artasvarupam bahurupa rupitam.
Sankhyana yasyashtayato palambhanat.
Sankhyana yasyashtayato palambhanat.
Tasmaya namaste vyapadesha rupine. Yat.
Of whom?
Rupam. The form. Etat.
This.
Nijamayaya arpitam. Manifested by your personal potency. Artasvarupam. This entire visible cosmic manifestation. Bhaharuparupitam.
Manifested in various forms.
Sankhya. Who can guess what Sankhya means? Huh? Yes, yes, that's one way of saying it, yes. Now, he said, here he says, the measurement. It's all related, yeah? Not, oh, sorry, na, not. Yasya, of which, there, asti, there is. Ayata, falsely. Upalambhanat,
from perceiving.
Tasmai, unto him, the Supreme Lord. Namaha. What's namaha? My respectful obeisances. Te. Unto you. Avyapadesha. Cannot be ascertained by mental speculation. Rupine. Whose real form. Who remembers the deity that's being worshipped now? Huh? Kurmaya. Wonderful. All the different inhabitants of... Is it Bharatavarsh? Huh? Yeah, that's the heavenly sphere, right?
Was it Bhumando? Is it Bhumando? They're all offering their different deities that they worship on different planets. And the name of the person that's worshiping this deity is Ariyama. My dear Lord, this visible cosmic manifestation is a demonstration of your own creative energy. Since the countless varieties of forms within this cosmic manifestation are simply a display of your external energy, this Virat Rupa, universal body, is not your real form. Except for a devotee in transcendental consciousness, no one can perceive your actual form. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So what did Ariyama say? Except for? Yes, a devotee, specifically a devotee in transcendental consciousness. No one else can perceive his actual form. But what is the Virat Rupa then? What is it a manifestation? What is it a demonstration of the Lord's, what, his creative energy? Yes. Great, okay. Purport by His Divine Grace, Krishi Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Prabhupada, here he goes again. Mayavadi philosophers. In the beginning, the devotees used to think that Prabhupada had a fight with someone in India, a group called the Mayavadis, and then they realized we are the Mayavadis. Mayavadi philosophers think the universal form of the Lord to be real and the personal form illusory. They're really in Maya. We can understand their mistake by a simple example. A fire consists of three elements. What are the three elements of fire? Huh? And what else? Heat, light, and fire. Fire. Yeah, that's the three elements. Anyone can understand that the original fire is the reality and that the heat and light are simply the fire's energy, right? Heat and light are the formless energies of fire. And in that sense, they are unreal. Only the fire has form, and therefore it is the real form of the heat and light. As Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya tatam idam sarvam, Jagad avyakta murtina. Anyone know that verse? What is it? You know the translation? It's a wonderful verse. Yeah. This entire universe is pervaded. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. Thus, the impersonal conception of the Lord is like the expansion of heat and light from a fire. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord also says, Matsthani sarvabhutani nachaham teshu avastitaha. The entire material creation is resting on Krishna's energy. Sutri mani ganaiva, like pearls on a string, right? You don't see the string, but just take it away, you see what happens. Either material, spiritual, or marginal. But because his form is absent from the expansion of his energy, he is not personally present. Okay, I'm going to say that one again. The entire material creation is resting on Krishna's energy, either material, spiritual, or marginal. But because his form is absent from the expansion of his energy, he is not personally present. It's quite dense. This inconceivable expansion of the Supreme Lord's energy is called inconceivable expansion. What's it called? Yeah, Achinta Shakti, exactly. You don't even have the book there, see? Therefore, no one can understand the real form of the Lord without becoming his devotee. Amagyanatimirandhasya gyananjana salakaya chakshurun militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha.
I was born in the darkest of ignorance, and my spiritual master is opening my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him.
Panchakalpa tarubhyascha kripasindubhyevacha patitanan pavnebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaudra Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Oh, I beg for the blessing of the devotees that I may say something useful and at least not detrimental. I picked up on 3 points in this purport that I would like to speak a little bit on, or let Prabhupada speak on, because I refer to his purports, which are always full of nectar. So one is how devotees view the universal form, the troublesome and unnatural mode of impersonalism, and Lord Krishna's simultaneous presence and non-presence in the material creation. So when you hear about the Virat Rupa being unreal or imaginary, it's a little surprising, because on the one hand we hear that everything that comes from Krishna has to be real because he's real. So it's a very subtle point of our philosophy. And I wanted to examine a little bit more this idea of the Virat, or the universal form of the Lord, being imaginary. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.30. The conception of the Virat, universal form of the Lord, as appearing in the material world is imaginary. It is to enable the less intelligent and neophytes to adjust to the idea of the Lord's having form. But factually, the Lord has no material form. I can only appreciate the material world now that I know about Krishna. I remember people used to always go talk about how beautiful the mountains were and how beautiful the forests were, and I would think, I don't find them beautiful. They're big, and they're scary, and they're cold, and they're dark. But now that I know they're related to Krishna, I can feel that they're beautiful. So Prabhupada says, the conception of the Lord, known as the Vishvarupa or the Virat Rupa, is particularly not mentioned along... Hey, what's going on here? Oh, great. My computer's deciding that it's going to restart. Configuring Windows. I didn't ask for that. We have to wait a few minutes. Unless someone has a Canto 1 here I can read from. Is there a Canto 1? I can finish reading that. I doubt that it's here, but... Pardon me?
Chapter 3, excerpt.
1330. But is it there? Oh yeah, you got it there, I think. Great. Awesome. Thank you. Okay, the conception of the Lord, known as the Vishvarupa or the Virat Rupa, is particularly not mentioned. Did I turn it off yet, Muslim? Along with the various incarnations of the Lord, because all the incarnations of the Lord mentioned above are transcendental, and there is not a tinge of materialism in their bodies. There is no difference between the body and self as there is in the conditioned soul. The Virat Rupa is conceived for those who are just neophyte worshippers. For them, the material Virat Rupa is presented, and it will be explained in the second canto. In the Virat Rupa, the material manifestation of different planets have been conceived as his legs, hands, etc. Actually, all such descriptions are for the neophytes. The neophytes cannot conceive of anything beyond matter. The material conception of the Lord is not counted in the list of his factual forms. As Paramatma or Supersoul, the Lord is within each and every material form, even within the atoms, but the outward material form is but an imagination, both for the Lord and the living being. The present form of the conditioned souls are also not factual. The conclusion is that the material conception of the body of the Lord as Virat is imaginary. Both the Lord and the living beings are living spirits and have original spiritual bodies. Thank you. So anybody like to say what they took out of that purport? On one side, we're told that nothing can be unreal if it comes from Krishna. But in what sense is the Virat Rupa unreal, and in what sense is this material body unreal? I realize I'm getting more deaf because I can't hear half of what everybody's saying. If you need to.
Is it temporary manifestation, it will disappear, so it is unreal in that perspective?
Yeah, in the perspective of who we really are and who Krishna really is, the material world can be considered imaginary or unreal. Sometimes Prabhupada argues vehemently that it's not unreal, because how can something unreal come from the real? But in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada taught us to look at things from as many perspectives as possible, from every angle. So from the angle of our eternal identity, and from the angle of Krishna's original form as the source of everything, the material energy is imaginary. And do you remember the example that we heard in the purport today about fire? What did we hear about Prabhupada? Do you want to say it? Janmashtami Puja? Yes. And so how is it that the heat and light are in one sense imaginary? Yes, and that it's the fire that has the actual form. And if the form of fire is not there, there would be no heat and light. It's interesting though, sometimes the form of fire can be very subtle, right? Nuclear energy and et cetera and et cetera. But the bottom line is that if it's fire, at some point there's a manifestation of heat and light. Okay. Does everybody understand that point? Does it have to be examined? Does anybody have any other realizations? It's quite a simple point in one sense, but it's subtle, and it's important that we have to understand it properly. It's really interesting that people who don't accept Krishna's form as real, they see the Lord's form as illusory. Prabhupada said, they see the Lord's form as illusory, and the universal form of the Lord to be real. Isn't that interesting how your conception of life, like pantheists, for instance, pantheists, they see God in all the material energy and et cetera, et cetera. They're one of the what you could call a branch of Mayavad. They like to see God in the mountains and the forests and all the manifestation of nature. This is real, but the ultimate form of Krishna is not real. So that's, you can see that people become very bewildered. Gopinath ki jai. So this idea of trying to understand the Supreme as impersonal is not easy. It's a very difficult path. I remember, who knows a devotee named Charudas, my godbrother. Isn't he a wonderful Vaishnava? And his wife too, Bhakti, her name is Vaibhavi. Incredible artist, very devotional, very chaste. In the beginning of the movement, her husband put on orange. You know, in those days we were so mad. So he put on orange, but you know, she thought, he's my husband, he can put on whatever color he wants. And so after a while he put white back on again.
And sometimes devotees would do wild things when they first joined the movement. But she was, I remember one time I was in so much anxiety. I went to see her. She was the wife of the temple president. And I said, always in so much anxiety. She said, Jayapatra, that's good. She said, it's not the International Society for Bliss Consciousness. It's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. She said, if you're in anxiety, that's good. That means you know that you had a lot of advancement to make. If you're not in anxiety, then you're in difficulty because then you think you're already there. And then I helped her. She was painting she had designed beautiful decorations for the front of the altar, and she let me help her paint. Although I'm blind and I have two left hands, she let me help her, and I became very soothed in her association. It was wonderful. And her husband also was a wonderful Vaishnava. He gave this class from Bhagavad Gita 12.5, Klesho Dikta Vastesham, this verse about how impersonalism is very difficult. And I remember it's more troublesome. He kept saying, it was like that verse just became one of my favorite verses because he gave such an animated and realized class on it. So faithful to Srila Prabhupada. This is 12.5. Klesho Dikita Rastesham Avyakta Sakta Chetasam Avyakta Higatir Dukham Dihavad Viravapyate Dukham. You can already hear it. It's very difficult. For those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Supreme, advancement is very troublesome. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. I remember before I joined the movement, I was also in distress, and I had a friend, and she was into this impersonalist philosophy. I said, I had to tell her, I'm so unhappy. She goes, you're almost there. I said, where? She said, there. I said, where? She couldn't really tell me. Because it was impersonal, right? And I was very frustrated. I remember one time I met a man and he goes, what are you into? I said, I don't know. I go, what are you into? He goes, Buddhism. I said, well, what's Buddhism all about? He goes, everything is void. I go, that's horrible. Everything's void, but that's horrible. Luckily for me, we didn't have anything but to do with each other after that because we didn't agree on the basic. But so voidism and impersonalism are very troublesome. For a devotee, there is no difficulty in approaching the Supreme immediately and directly. But for those who are following the impersonal way to spiritual realization, the path is difficult. They have to understand the unmanifested representation of the Supreme through such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads, and they have to learn the language, understand the non-perceptual feelings, and realize all these processes. This is not very easy for a common man. A person in Krishna consciousness, engaged in devotional service simply by the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, simply by offering regulative obeisances unto the deity, simply by hearing the glories of the Lord, and simply by eating the remnants of foodstuffs offered to the Lord, realizes the Supreme Personality of Godhead very easily. There is no doubt that the impersonalists are unnecessarily taking a troublesome path with the risk of not realizing the absolute truth at the ultimate end. But the personalist, without any risk, trouble, or difficulty, approaches the Supreme Personality directly. A similar passage appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is stated there that if one ultimately has to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this surrendering process is called bhakti, but instead takes the trouble to understand what is Brahman and what is not Brahman and spends his whole life in that way, the result is simply troublesome. Do you remember what it's compared to? He said, beating the empty rice. Husks. You already have all the rice out and you're still beating them trying to get some rice out, but it's all gone already. Therefore, it is advised here that one should not take up this troublesome path of self-realization because there is uncertainty in the ultimate result. So you might even have a nice experience with what would be called the impersonal realization of God. I know a person who took to devotional service for some time. Before she began practicing devotional, she's not really seriously practicing now. She likes devotees and she likes certain things about Krishna consciousness.
But before she joined the movement, she had been a heroin addict, hardcore heroin addict, prostitute, the whole thing. And then at a certain point she realized, I have to stop this. And she managed to stop it. She started to perform very severe austerities. And first of all, just giving up heroin is a terrible austerity because you really have to suffer for a while. And then you have to stop the craving. I know another person who's used to take heroin, and this person said that if you just think of an hypodermic needle, your mouth waters. Because you get so addicted to the idea of what this gives you. Anyway, so she managed to give up this terrible habit, and she began looking at all kinds of alternative ways of living. She dived full into vegetarianism and all kinds of meditation, different kinds of meditation. So one day she was listening to, it's called The Passion. Who wrote that? It's a very beautiful, is it Beethoven who wrote it? It's a beautiful classical piece of music. Is it Beethoven? Do you know? Bach, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bach. And so this is a meditation on Jesus' suffering when he was carrying the cross and in the garden and the whole thing. So she went into this meditation. It was she had a very intense experience. So she was transported to the place where Jesus was carrying the cross and all the people were yelling at him. And she was very deeply absorbed and she was thinking, this is love personified here, and they're all treating him so badly. So she tried to approach Jesus to help him, and then again she was transported to like a realm of unlimited light. And she did get a glimpse of Jesus, and she saw some face, and she looked towards feet, but then everything disappeared, and it was light and effulgence, and it was a wonderful experience for her. And she was free from this material world, all the suffering. So after that, she had a hard time, even when she came to the movement, to take to Krishna consciousness, because she had had an experience that made her very attached to a certain kind of freedom. And she couldn't accept that God had formed really in the ultimate sense anymore. So even if you do take to the impersonal feature, and even if accidentally or by Krishna's grace, you do get a little sense of the impersonal Brahman, it's like you become so attached to it that you can't let go of it to realize the highest form of spiritual realization, which is to have a relationship with Krishna. She said she did have a kind of sense of love and light and warmth, but she couldn't maintain it because she wasn't purified enough. And even if you do maintain it, nature of the soul is to want more, not just a sense of love, but active love. But it became an impediment for her. So the idea is that impersonalism is troublesome to develop the realization, and once you get it, it's troublesome to make further advancement. So it's nothing but trouble. This is the idea. Yes, and so in today's purport, remember another famous verse that Prabhupada quoted about Krishna. You know what it was. You remember what it was, Janmashtami? You said the translation. No, you said the translation. By me? In my unmanaged? Yeah. And you said something more later of the verse. Pardon me? Yeah, you said the second part of the verse, yeah. Yes, so I will read a little bit from that verse today. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavashtitaha. This is Bhagavad Gita 9.4, by the way. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And then, just like Prabhupada was saying today, and also Adiyama was saying, unless one is a devotee with transcendental senses, one cannot perceive the Lord. So Prabhupada says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not perceivable through the gross material senses. So what is that famous verse in the Nectar of Devotion that says how you can perceive Krishna? What is the translation? Say it nice and loud so everybody can hear.
No one can perceive
especially with the tongue, right? Yes. Lord Sri Krishna's name, fame, pastimes, etc. cannot be understood by material senses. Only to one who is engaged in pure devotional service under proper guidance is he revealed. So what is the famous verse in the Brahma Samhita that says a very similar thing? Yes. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santaksadaivadidayeshu vilokayanti yam shamma sundarama chincha gunasarupam govindam govindam ari purusham tamaham bhajami. One can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within himself and outside of himself if one has developed the transcendental loving attitude towards him. Inside and outside. Prabhupada says in another purport in the Bhagavad Gita that a person who is advanced in devotional service becomes qualified to see the Lord within the sphere of his own activities. So devotee is very busy serving Krishna, he sees Krishna everywhere. Thus, for people in general, he is not visible. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading, everywhere present, he is not conceivable by material senses. This is indicated by the word avyaktamurtina. But actually, although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him. As we have discussed in the 7th chapter, this is from the Bhagavad Gita, right? The entire material cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two different energies. The superior spiritual energy and the inferior material energy. Just as the sunshine is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over the creation, and everything is resting in that energy. Yet one should not conclude that because he is spread all over, he has lost his personal existence. To refute such an argument, the Lord says, I am everywhere, and everything is in me, but still I am aloof. For example, a king heads a government which is but the manifestation of the king's energy. The different governmental departments are nothing but the energies of the king, and each department is resting on the king's power. But still, one cannot expect the king to be present in every department personally. That is a crude example, because Krishna is present. Similarly, all the manifestations that we see and everything that exists both in the material world and in the spiritual world are resting on the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The creation takes place by the diffusion of his different energies, and as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vistabhyam Idam Kritsnam. He is everywhere present by his personal representation, the diffusion of his different energies. And Burijan, he elaborates on that in Surrender Unto Me. Here, Krishna begins to describe his simultaneous connectedness and non-connectedness with matter. The material world rests on his energy, but he is aloof. He is the source of the material world, and he maintains it, but he does not directly associate with it. He is free from material nature, but material nature is not free from him. You were mentioning this before. Gaining Aishwarya Gyan, or knowledge of Krishna's inconceivably opulent potency, all matter rests upon him, yet he remains aloof, should stimulate our reverence and devotion. And Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita, that unless one is aware of his opulence, that one who becomes aware of his opulence develops devotion to him. Of this there is no doubt. So if a devotee does have this Aishwarya Gyan, and he does realize that it's the Lord's energies, then he can actually even see Krishna and worship him in the material energy. Very interesting, because they see this energy as an expansion of Krishna. Maybe you've all experienced Krishna in his material energy. Who can think of how you might have experienced Krishna in the material energy? Sometimes when there's a breeze, a soft breeze, I feel nothing is more loving and intimate than this breeze. It's Krishna's energy. It's making me feel caressed and loved and cherished. And I think no one can do this for me better than Krishna. And it's completely pure. And not just me, but everyone can have this wonderful experience. And what about the sun? When the sun shines, especially here in Belgium, when you get some sunshine, you feel, somebody loves me. And that somebody is Krishna, right? Can anybody think of any experiences like that with the material energy? I'm really sorry, I'm deaf. I need you to speak louder.
Okay, so you have flowering cherry trees and glass flowers. And at a certain moment, the smell is finished. And there's usually one piece that takes most of it. And one girl comes like all the way.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's very rare to experience the blossoms. It's one piece. It's
yeah. So you feel like it's a gift from Krishna if he lets you experience that. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you. Yes, gentlemen? If you're blessed with that faith, right? Yes, if you're blessed with the faith. Like Prabhupada says that if a mother sees her child's shoes, she becomes... So a devotee who is properly connected with the Lord, everywhere he looks, he sees Krishna. Thank you. That's very special transcendental vision. Huh? You have something special that you feel sometimes when, in the world when you see... Or does it have to be in Vrindavan or someplace or in the temple? On Sankirtan, you said? If you're in good consciousness. Yeah. Yeah, if you're in good consciousness, you can see Krishna. But that's what Prabhupada says. No one can perceive Krishna unless they're purified with the transcendental senses. Yes.
During the winter, when it's cold outside and the heating system is working, you remember that the heat is Krishna. So.
Yeah. Krishna's providing. You feel personally protected by Krishna's warmth. Well, I don't know. You must all know a devotee named Mangalananda. I wish I had a PowerPoint, but I didn't have time to get that together. But he wrote a very, well, I don't know if it was his words, but it was at least his music. Him and another devotee wrote a very beautiful song about Krishna's presence in the material energy. So I'll just read the words and then I'll play the music for you so you recognize the music, the words. He said, "Oh Lord, the sun's effulgence hides your face. Your blissful form lies far beyond my eyes, and now your wonders call my heart's embrace as dawn displays your beauty in the sky. The rainbow shows the colors of your dress." This is all from the description in the scripture, right? "The movement of the moon reflects your mind. Your smiling is the cause of happiness, and love exists because you are so kind." I grew up with this in Krishna consciousness. I love this. "O Govinda, within my heart, celestial herdsman, lotus-eyed one, your precious gift of love impart. O you who stand behind the sun, you are the one in my heart. The rolling rivers flow forth from your veins. The clouds that fill the sky come from your hair. The seeds of life are watered by your rains, and from your breathing blows the mighty air. My Lord, you are the source of all I see. Your movements are the passing days of time. You are the resting place of all that be, and love exists because you are so kind." And then I'll go into within my heart. So if you're interested, I'd like to play it because it has a beautiful feeling. And it was really dovetailing his personal... realization and insight. Here it is. Where do I put this? I can hear it better. repeats it again. And the last time, it's more intense. He has even more feeling about how the Lord is the one in his heart. It's really interesting. I don't know if you know the story of Mangalananda Prabhu, but when he joined the movement, the devotees were telling, because he's like a consummate musician, and they were telling him, well, you're just in Maya, get rid of your guitar. And and it was very hard for him. And so one day he snuck in to see Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was recording some music with the devotees were recording Srila Prabhupada. And so he managed to get past the guard at the door, and he got in there. And Prabhupada was just about to stand up to leave from his own recording session. He said, Prabhupada, can I ask you a question? And Prabhupada sat down again. And even when he says Prabhupada sat down again, he starts crying, just to think that Prabhupada stopped everything just for him. And he said, you know, Prabhupada, I have music that I make, and I would like to just that you hear an example of it. So he played some of the little bits of this music for Srila Prabhupada to hear. And then he said, Prabhupada, they say that I'm in Maya, and I shouldn't play music, and I should just only do book distribution. And then he said, Prabhupada said, cows moo. Yeah, so that could mean anything, right? And then Prabhupada stood up and said, do it, it will be successful. So Prabhupada blessed him to make this nice music, and I think it's quite nice. And it was interesting because in the purport, Prabhupada had said that, what did he say? He said, one can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, always within himself and outside himself if one has developed a transcendental loving attitude towards him. And this song was O Govinda. So the devotee was really taking the Bhagavatam very seriously. And when he would read the Bhagavatam and say that you know, the rains are coming, you know, watering the seeds of life, and how the mountains... Well, he didn't say anything about the sun's effulgence, high, etc. So he just really, really could see Krishna and everything. And I remembered also what I had, something that Gaur Govinda Maharaj was on Facebook, actually. He said, do you think Krishna's beauty is Krishna? No, Krishna's beauty is in the eyes of the bhaktas who have developed anurag. In their eyes, his form becomes more and more beautiful, newer and newer. So by the blessing of Krishna, when his beauty is revealed to his devotee, and the devotee is able to recognize, has a capacity for that extrasensory, ever-increasing bliss. If you don't have the capacity, you can't tolerate it. It's Krishna's mercy. Okay, thank you for listening patiently. I spoke about how devotees view the universal form. The troublesome and unnatural mode of impersonalism, and Krishna's presence and non-presence in the material creation. So if anyone would like to make a comment or correction. It's interesting that a person who's a devotee can see Krishna in his heart. He doesn't see the form in his heart. He sees Krishna. It's a matter of revelation, actually. There's a really nice description of the proof of God by Jiva Goswami. Prabhupada has integrated into one of his purports, I think it's in the second canto, that the super soul is not the ultimate feature of God, because otherwise God would just be our order supplier. But if one is advanced in bhakti, then Krishna reveals himself in his two-handed form in the heart. Is that all right?
Yes,
Anand.
I had a question just occurred to me. Rupa is saying that the universal form is a neophyte devotee, but then he shows that to advance devotees like Yashodabai and Arjuna, and then he says, I'm going to give you a special vision so you can see that it cannot be seen by others.
But they weren't happy with the form. Neither.
That's
my point. An advanced devotee doesn't find delight in the universal form. You have to be more advanced to see Krishna's personal form.
No, but But my question is, why was Krishna showing them the universal form? Because they were neophyte?
Yes, I mean, Krishna's Prabhupada's statements can be taken at in different ways at different times. No, he didn't show it to them because they were neophyte. Of course, it was part of the Leela. We know that with Mother Yashoda, this is what Palananamara says. I think he took it from a commentary. Palananamara says that Krishna told, sure, I have some dirt in my mouth, the whole universe in my mouth. And with Arjuna already was convinced that Krishna was God, but he showed Arjuna the universal form for our sake. Because as neophytes, we need to think like that. So I don't think that is because they were neophytes, not at all. But anybody else have anything to say about that? Wasn't because they were neophytes.
Because Duryodhana, he saw that he was a neophyte, and he still didn't believe.
He took it as some mystic display. It's just up to Krishna, right? I think you have a realization that you want to share with us. Because I think you're asking a rhetorical question.
No, I'm just... when you read the Prabhupada, I got a little bit confused, but it's jumping to me something. And I know Prabhupada said that we should prepare for our sake and for in the future. People say we are God and we show that we are so form. And the mind is of that universal form, it's not permanent, it's a temporary form that
Krishna
shows. It's not really imaginary, but it's there.
It's imaginary in a certain sense. That's why it's not included in the list of incarnations. It's imaginary in the sense that it's always changing, and we can't really take shelter there. That's what I understand. Whereas Krishna's eternal form, you can take shelter there. That's what I understand. Anybody else realize? Right, exactly, yeah. But because it's his creation and we have to begin to relate his creation to him, then that's one way of seeing. And naturally, if you love Krishna, it's no mistake, right? And this devotee that wrote this song, obviously he was feeling bliss, right? To write such beautiful, and to feel close to Krishna just by seeing the sunrise. And he really felt that this is Krishna's, you call my heart's embrace as dawn displays your beauty in the sky. So, I mean, it's very intimate, right? But it's not as intimate as fanning Krishna with a chamara, but, I mean, it's wonderful already. If we can relate to Krishna, any moment of love we have for Krishna is the highest and most perfect moment we can ever have in this world. Anytime we're feeling, if Krishna allows us to feel this connection with him, we should know, this is my gift. Nothing else is as important as this. No, he sees too much. That's Krishna's mercy. Yes. Well, the thing is, at the same time, Prabhupada asked us to worship the deity in the mood of Lakshmi Narayan, so that we didn't become overly familiar. So that's why it's important for us to be aware of what he called Aishvarya Gyan, to know that Krishna is the source of everything and the opulence. Otherwise, you might take Krishna lightly. So you can see it's many subtleties, many aspects to our approach to Krishna. It's not so linear, right? It's very, it's in one sense it's very simple, but it's also very detailed. I just wanted to address this Puru because he wanted to say something.
Yeah.
godless display.
But Arjuna is the devotee, automatically accepts
Krishna. But even Dhritarashtra got to see it, even though he was blind. One more person wanted to say one last thing. Was it you, Mark? Did you have your hand up?
Mm-hmm. So, I just asked God once, Dhananjana Swami, about giving us a form. And then he said, because I was asking if this is spiritual, what is material. And he said that it depends on the vision, because, Krishna has, for Krishna is a spiritual.
Yeah, right. Everything's, for Krishna.
So, for the neophyte, then it is material, because you are not able to speak to Krishna by practicing the natural ability.
Yeah. Ultimately, material is a consciousness, right? Material means I want to enjoy. But that's, nothing is actually material. Material means that you get into consciousness that I want to enjoy it. There's so many ways to look at that. I just wanted to say that one time Prabhupada was in Calcutta when the bombs were falling. And Prabhupada said that he saw this as Krishna's universal form, but he said it wasn't very lovable. So, like you said, it depends on your consciousness. He wasn't saying, oh, this is a war, it's terrible. He was seeing Krishna also. And one time even the bombs were falling and they said, Prabhupada, you have to go down to the shelter and abide. And Prabhupada said, no, I finished my kachoris first. He wasn't so afraid of the universal form. Anyway, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.